My name is Edgar Mannheimer, and this is Kalam, a podcast about the Middle East.
And this thought keeps me going. You know, this survivor's guilt. Sometimes it has advantages. It makes you, you
know. Motivates you.
Yeah.
That was Dunya Ashour, a 23-year-old Gazan living in Egypt. We'll be getting back to Dunya and the specific suffering of women in war in just a second. But first, an announcement. We're so proud to tell you about our partnership with the best Palestinian food you can get in Sweden at Mazra'a Restaurant on Skånegatan 82 in Stockholm. Run by Palestinian chef and restaurateur Nidal Kersh, Mazra'a, which means farm in Arabic, not only has the best hummus in Sweden, but is a modern Palestinian bistro. The weather right now in Stockholm is lovely, so come through to Mazra'a and have a glass of wine and some Palestinian tapas. Nidal also runs Falafel Baren on Hornsgatan 39. Pop in for a quick falafel wrap, the best you'll find in Sweden. See you there. We'd also like to remind you that if you enjoy Kalam Podcast, please give us a rating and subscribe to us on whatever podcast application you're listening to right now. It helps other people find out about us. And follow us on Instagram for continuous updates and historical perspectives at Kalam Podcast. And if you want to support the show, you can do so by joining the Kalam community on Patreon. For just $3 a month, you'll gain access to full-length interviews with all our guests and bonus material, including Kalam shorts, 10 to 15-minute explainers of important terminology like Zionism, Orientalism, and settler colonialism. Sign up at patreon.com/kalampodcast. Now, on to the show. Haram tinsuni bil marra. This song was written by the foundational Egyptian composer Sayyid Darwish. The text means, visit me every year, and wouldn't it be a shame if you forgot me? For me, this sounds like Egyptian nostalgia at its best, a kind of bittersweet longing. Don't ask me why this song popped into my head when I was thinking about what song I'd like to include in today's episode. It just did.
اسمي دنيا عاشور خريجة أداب إنجليزي وعمري 23 سنة كنت بأشتغل في شركة الاتصالات.
Innan den 7 oktober levde jag ett normalt. I first spoke to Dunya Ashour in October of last year when I interviewed her for Swedish radio. At the time, she and her family had recently escaped Israel's bombing campaign in northern Gaza, where her home, and the home of every single person she knows, was completely destroyed. When we spoke, she and her family were living in a tent city in Khan Yunis in southern Gaza, together with 40,000 other people. I remember her telling me about the specific difficulties women were facing. Waiting for an hour or more to use a filthy bathroom and only being able to spend about 5 minutes there before someone starts banging on the door. Dunya said that for this reason, women in the camp were searching for medication to block their menstrual cycles. When they couldn't find this medication, many ended up wearing children's diapers, since nothing else was available. Before the war, Dunya had studied English literature and worked as an English-Arabic translator and lived as normal a life as can be lived in a place like Gaza, with her dog and 3 cats. Today, she does not know what's become of her pets. Thankfully, Dunya and her family managed to evacuate Gaza and are living in Cairo, Egypt, which is where we met in person for the first time 2 days ago. Dunya wears round glasses and is soft-spoken, and I think what she has to say will give a unique insight into what life is like in Gaza for a young woman. We also touch on difficult topics like the cycle of abuse that begins with Palestinians being humiliated by Israeli soldiers and ends with them taking it out on their loved ones, or their loved ones taking it out on them. Dunya Ashour suffers from survivor's guilt, which I think many Palestinians do. And what she emphasized the most during the course of our interview was the resilience and strength of the people of Gaza. Without further ado, here's Dunya Ashour. Dunya Ashour, we spoke in October last year, and you were in Gaza then. I think you were in Khan Yunis.
Yes.
And now you're in Cairo. You said you're here with your sister.
Yeah.
Is all of your family here, or do you still have family in Gaza?
No, we get out. So my mom is Russian, and I am half Russian, half Palestinian.
Oh, okay.
So they evacuated us to Russia, and then my sister and I, we decided to come back here in Cairo, because my brother, he studies medicine in Cairo, and because, you know, the restrictions because of the war in Russia and the work and, you know, the language and all of this. And somehow in the beginning we thought that it would last for like 2 months, 3 months, and we will be so close. So when the war ends, we'll come back to Gaza. And it's been 5 months, and you know, it's now we realize it's. I remember when we came in Cairo, we were looking for apartments, and then we would say it's only for like 3 months contract, no longer. And 2 months ago, we decided to, you know, have an apartment, you know, rent for 1 year contract, and it's, you know.
How did that feel, like making that decision? Okay, it's gonna be 1 year.
When we decided to do that, I guess deep down we knew that we're not coming back, and it hurts. But at the same time, we still hope that this war ends and we will come back, and even that says whatever it takes, I will go, and I'll be there. I don't know.
I think I didn't know that your mom was Russian.
Yeah.
And this must be kind of crazy, having like one of your identities being, yeah, Palestinian and the other Russian, yeah, and both are mixed up in these like catastrophes of war.
Yeah.
How, I mean, what is that like?
I actually hate, I don't like when people identify me as you're half-half. No, I feel like I'm Palestinian, and I've always lived in Palestine. I don't know, my friends tell me, Dunya, now you have the worst 2 passports in the world. I don't know, it's different. Well, you know, the context of Palestine, it's different than Russia. And
of course. So can you talk a little bit about your life in Gaza and what it's like growing up in Gaza City for people who have never been there? Because I think most people who will listen to this will never have been going to Gaza because it's so difficult to get in.
Yeah.
And I think many people have this image that it's just like, I don't know. I mean, I think people hear Gaza and they immediately think that it's something bad, or it's something difficult, or it's oppression, or it's, you know, very, you know, like Hamas controlled and like scary or something. But whenever I've seen you post about Gaza and your life there, it seems like this was a life that you were kind of happy with and that you miss now, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So for like a young woman, what was it like growing up in Gaza?
I mean, I feel like also my relationship with Gaza, it's complicated, because when I was there, I was always like, I want to go out, I want to do something out, and
go out of Gaza?
Gaza. Yeah. And now I am out, and what? I keep reflecting that I had a really nice life, and I had a nice house. My bedroom, I decorated my bedroom. I had 3 cats and 1 dog, and I lost them in Gaza. You know, my friends were there, and the beach. I love the beach. Everyone in Gaza loves the beach.
Yeah.
It's our escape from everything. Whenever you feel sad, feel bad, feel like you don't know what to do, you just go to the beach and that's it. And now I think of Gaza's beach. It's different than any beach I've been to. Because, I don't know, I feel like it's free. It's the concept of the beach for Gazans, it's different. I used to work, and I don't know, it's sad when I think of my life in Gaza right now. I got out because I was lucky, and I believe that people in Gaza, they have stories and they have dreams, and they deserve all the good things in the world. And it breaks my heart that everything in the back of their heads, it's always war, it's always death. And people don't realize how much we really, I don't know, love life. We're simple, they are so simple, they just want to enjoy the moment. But I mean, it's always the bigger circle, it's occupation and Palestine. We were born and we were taught that it's what we fight for and it's what we live for. And sometimes Palestine, not sometimes, all the time, it gives us meaning, you know.
What kind of meaning?
Something to live for, that it's not all for nothing. And it's not all in vain, what's happening right now. But you know, at the same time, it's heartbreaking because we are all alone in this. And this is heartbreaking.
When you look back now, you said that when you were living in Gaza, that there were moments when you wanted to leave Gaza.
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know, Gaza, it's sieged, you know? It's sieged, you didn't get to do anything really in there. You don't, sometimes it's hard to live there as a woman. Because, you know, the society and the patriarchy and they are, I don't know, adat, taqaleed.
Traditional.
Yeah, it wasn't the easiest thing to live in Gaza as a woman.
Yeah.
But I always say it's not the big picture, because it gave me something to fight for. And it's not cliche, because I know things about life because I lived in Gaza, and I know how to survive because I survived for wars before this genocide. And it made me bold, it made me so sure of what I want in this life. And it made me so sure that Palestine is really يعني أكتر قضية حرة فيش فيها أي اختلاف. يعني أي حد بفكر إنه فلسطين فيها إشي معقد, هي أسهل قضية الواحد يفكر فيها. If you think of Palestine and think it's complicated, no.
It's a matter of freedom and justice.
Yes.
It's not complicated.
وشعب غزة وناس غزة, مش عشان أنا غزوية ومش عشان أنا عشت طول عمري هناك, بس هم أكتر ناس أحرار في العالم.
Yeah, the Gazan people are the most free people in the world.
Yeah. كل الناس خذلوهم, كل العالم خذلهم, كل العالم بيعملش إشي, هم اللي بخوضوا كل هذا لحالهم. وستيل برضو تعبوا, الناس تعبوا, they are tired.
Of course, yeah.
And exhausted and everything, but they resist with everything.
Yeah, when I was speaking to Yumna Sayed, she also was speaking about, because she's not from Gaza originally, but she lived there for many years because her husband is from Gaza. Mm-hmm. And she was talking about the spirit of the people of Gaza and how that inspired her so much. Do you think this spirit that you're also talking about, which obviously can get tired and exhausted, but do you think this comes from being resistant to occupation and surviving despite the blockade and the siege, or something else?
100%. Because you know what? I was living in a tent, and in October and November, it was, I think now when I see, now we are in May, and I see that people have gone through a lot through these 8 months. And I think in October and November, it was easier. And it's also, I don't know, it's ironic to think that the beginning of the war, it was easier, because now it's a lot harder because it's all genocide. And I think of people, they were helping each other to get food, they were helping each other to get bread and vegetables, and in the middle of it all and this, they always helped each other.
Sense of like community and solidarity.
Yeah.
And but you're saying this changed now?
I don't say that it changed. This war made us, they still help each other and everything, but I guess الحرب هاي خلتنا نعمل إعادة تعريف لكل المفاهيم اللي عنا, حتى النسيج الاجتماعي أعتقد. وهذا الجانب اللي بالحرب اللي ما حدش بيحكي عنه.
What, yeah, like what the war does to a society, it breaks it, I guess.
Yeah.
Breaks the sense of community.
Yeah. Somehow we understand. لأنه
طبعا.
بس يعني بقدر أكد لك فيش عيلة في الحرب هاي عاشت مع, يعني بيكونوا أسرة عاشت مع العيلة كلها, ما فيش عيلة ما صار فيها مشاكل, هو مشاكل. أنا كنت في الخيمة عايشة, والخيمة اللي قبالي كان في واحدة عايشة وجوزها وأخوها. جوزها رفع السكين على أخوها. أنت فاهم قديش المشهد كتير إيرونيك؟ هو رفع السكينة على أخوها وكل العالم حواليهم, وفي قصف ورانا, يعني في قصف ودخان ورانا, وهذا يعني مشهد بتحس اللي هو عن جد مش حقيقي. فاهم؟ وراح مزع ودم, وفي ورانا قصف, وفي أصوات بتعيط, يعني هذا اللي بحكي عنه. فاهم؟ أيوة, كل إشي بالحرب هاي في مفاهيم كتير بدنا نعملها إعادة تعريف.
وهذا الصراع كان يعني طبعا متأثر على ال, أو الحرب يأثر على هذا الصراع.
طبعا طبعاً. Yeah.
So there was, I mean, Dunya was saying that this war affects every single family in Gaza,
yeah.
for sure. There's no family that's not affected by it. And even she was saying that when she was staying in the refugee camps in Khan Yunis back in October and November, the family that was next to her, the husband of one of the mother and his basically brother-in-law started had a fight, and the brother-in-law like pulled out a knife in a really heated argument, and in the background there's bombs dropping, which is just like a kind of completely surreal scene. It's hard to imagine.
I guess it's the layers of occupation, of how occupation affects us in many layers.
Yeah.
And that's it.
There's one the Palestinian nation, and then there's the society, and then on the individual level, of course.
Also, we don't talk about women
in
wars, and we don't talk about violence because it's, we feel like it's not a priority right now, but it's also one of the layers.
Yeah.
And how violence against women, it becomes more violent during wars.
Yeah.
And no one talks about this.
Yeah.
You know?
I remember watching a documentary where a Palestinian father would explain this kind of dynamic. Mm-hmm. He was in the West Bank, but he was talking about how many times the Israelis would come into someone's house and brutally beat the father,
mm-hmm.
so that the father would be humiliated in front of
exactly.
his family.
Yeah.
And then the kind of strange dynamic that happens with the father is that he becomes even more patriarchal,
mm-hmm.
and he would beat his family more to prove to them that he's a man.
Yeah.
Is that like what you're talking about?
Exactly. And when they do that to women at checkpoints, so they know how the society thinks, and they use that against women. You
so
know,
they would humiliate them?
Yeah.
So how does that work? What would happen at a checkpoint?
I mean, they would... I heard a story from a friend in Nablus, and she told me that they asked her to take off her clothes, and this is humiliating, and no one tells this Israel to stop, you know, no one.
Yeah, because the soldier who did that knows what the woman's husband might be due
exactly.
after to protect his honor.
And this is how they use, you know, the context of the society, the Palestinian society to, you know, against women.
Yeah. And you were also talking, I remember when we spoke in October, about women looking for medicine to pause their menstrual cycle because you can't find any pads or anything to protect yourself or to, you know.
No one talks about this. I remember my sister, she was trying to find pills that could stop her period because and we didn't find the pills in October. But the thing is, when you go to the bathroom and you wait for like 1 hour or half an hour in a queue so you can go there, and if you spend more than 5 minutes in the bathroom, they would tell you like, what are you doing there, get out, everyone wants to go to the bathroom. And when you think of all of these things, it's hard on women, and pregnant women, and women who give birth in the world. I keep thinking of women who were pregnant in their first month in October, and now it's almost like 2 months and they would, you know, give birth to their child. I think of them, and I think of their child. I think of all people who are grandmas, who just want the morning to be here so they can, you know, sit under the sun and drink their tea, and now it's all gone. I don't know where, it's just these scenes, it's so simple, it's nothing, but it breaks my heart. It's now when you think of these scenes, you think of it as privileged to, you know, sit under the sun, drink a cup of tea, and you don't get that.
How has it been being in Cairo? You were talking a little bit about feeling sort of guilty that you're here, and you know so many people in Gaza.
Yeah.
How has the past few months been in Cairo?
I love Cairo. It's the warmest place in the world. And its people, they are so warm. And people help you. Some people help you. But in the back of your head, you know, it's the war didn't end.
Yeah.
And you have to keep surviving. And sometimes I can't get out of bed because, you know, I lost everything and now I have to start again. And sometimes it's all too much. But I think, you know what? You live in a house, and please get out of your bed and do something, because there are your people, your friends and your family, and they don't have this. And this thought keeps me going. You know, this survivor's guilt, sometimes it has advantages. It makes you, you
motivates
know.
Motivates you.
Yeah. But, you know, I keep thinking that the people live here. I mean, Masriyin, yani.
Egyptians.
Yeah, Egyptians. It's easier for us to be around people who get the context of Palestine, and they love Palestine, and they would say, oh, are you from Palestine, Gaza? Come, Sharfa, get this one for free, and how was it there, and we love you, and Sharfa-ish. And sometimes it's
yeah.
warm, and when you live around people who understand,
you don't have to explain yourself.
Exactly. So yeah, now I found a job. I work remotely. You know, just surviving. It's all just, you know, I just want to survive and that's it.
What are you working with?
I work as a project manager for a translation company.
Okay. English to Arabic? Or?
Yeah. I used to work as a translator before, and it helped. But also, when I tell you that people here, they help you, it's also a friend of a friend of a friend. They did that to me, and they helped me find this job. And that's what I'm talking about Egyptians and, you know, people who understand. Regarding all of this, 2 days ago, someone asked me, what are you trying to, you know, develop in your career, in your life? And I was telling her, I don't think it's the right question, because I feel guilty that I work and I found a job that allows me to, you know, pay my rent now, and other people in Gaza can't even find food. And it's so selfish to think of myself and my career and my future when people can't even have the أساسيات,
basics.
Yeah, basics. هو أكل يأكل. حليب وشربه لطفله.
Food and milk.
Yeah.
I understand that.
Yeah.
Of course. But if you would, if you still would allow yourself to dream, What is it that you would want to do with your life?
I want to, you know, pursue my master's degree in something related to gender, international relations, but it's always something related to women and helping women understand how we can, you know, in a context that, you know, suits Palestinian women.
Mm-hmm.
Because I hate how NGOs, they have their agendas. بياخدوا إشي من برا وبيحطوه في context مش إله. وبفكروا هيك بيطوروا. بس ما هيك مش بيطوروا بصراحة.
Yeah, the NGOs a lot of the time take a foreign context and apply it to another place like Palestine, and they try to develop that way, but that's not development, really.
باعتقادي كمان الـ NGOs مستفيدة أن يكون هيك الوضع ولا كيف بدهم يمولوا مشاريعهم ولا كيف بدهم يجيهم فلوس هذا هم مستفيدين عشان كده فيش تطوير ما في development ما في مشاريع عن جد تبني فيها وتقدر تكمل عليها هي بس أشياء اللي هو بحسها أشياء بس تسكت الكل إحنا بنعمل إشي بس عشان هذا بس هي مش بتطور هي مش بتعمل إحنا أنا يعني باعتقادي إنه إحنا محتاجين إشي منا وفينا ويبني علينا مش محتاجين إشي من برا عن جد وبفهم هذا قديش صعب هذا يعني صعب في كونتكست احتلال و
أيوة.
وكونتكست مجتمع أو حصار وانقسام كمان إحنا كتير بطلنا نحكي عن الانقسام
أيوة.
بس هو هلأ مش برايوريتي إحنا عنا هلأ الاحتلال هو هذا اللي لازم نركز عليه هو هذا لب المشاكل كلها لب وجزء منه الانقسام الانقسام سبب كبير اللي هو
جزء من الاحتلال أكيد So Dunya was talking about the fact that NGOs obviously benefit from the prevailing situation in a lot of countries that they work in, like in Palestine. Obviously, they wouldn't have a job if there weren't deep problems. But Dunya was saying that a lot of the times NGOs work to fix the problem superficially, but not in depth, so that Palestinians can build from whatever work that they're doing. And so Dunya feels rather Palestinians and Palestinian women should work, should do the work for themselves and build something for their own community. But obviously this is extremely difficult because of the Israeli occupation and because of the siege on Gaza. And from that occupation, obviously something that we don't always talk about, but that is the division of Palestinian society and politics between Hamas and Fatah and all the different groups, and also obviously geographically between the West Bank and Gaza, this kind of division.
I just want to say that my story is nothing compared to the people who are currently in Gaza, and they are, I was lucky to leave, and I mean, anyone who's out should, I feel that I have this obligation, and that whenever I had the chance to talk about it, I go and talk about it, and I just wish and know برضو anyone out who can talk about it, please do. It's, you know, sometimes the change is small, little, and you can't witness it, but it matters.
Yeah.
It matters, so even if you don't see it right now.
Sure. So, yeah. Have you met other Gazans in Cairo? I mean, there's quite a few at this point.
Yeah, like a few of my friends, they got out of Gaza, and we didn't talk about war. Actually, you know, that's the thing. Everyone who isn't Gazan, they always want to know. They always want to, and I understand. But we also, My sister and I in the house, we don't talk about war at all. And whenever someone asks something about, you know, the war and this genocide, it feels heavy because suddenly we're there. Because my sister's husband is still in Gaza and he didn't get out. He's a doctor and he refused to get out because, you know, he feels like, yeah, people there need him.
Yeah.
Sometimes we wake up and sometimes she tells me that it's been a week and he doesn't have internet connection. You know, it's hard sometimes, but we get up, we, you know, make food, and that's how surviving looks like. Sometimes you can get out of bed, sometimes you just cry in your bed, and then you go and make food because you have to, and life doesn't stop.
Yeah, I guess that's what surviving looks like.
Yeah.
Thank you, Dunya, for speaking to us. Batkala.
Thank you.
That was Dunya Ashour and the 11th episode of the Kalam podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. Shortly, we're going to open the Kalam podcast YouTube channel with recorded interviews that I conducted here in Cairo. So watch out for that. To find out more, follow us on Instagram at Kalam podcast. We'll be back next week with another full-length episode, and before then, a brand new Kalam Shorts for our Patreon subscribers. Join us at patreon.com/kalampodcast. Until then, that's all from us. Kalam was written and hosted by me, Edgar Mannheimer. Research and production by Sam Karl Samra. Poetry reading in Arabic by Khulud Saghir. And sound design by Arthur Mannheimer.